Great song from Brutal Attack. Yeah, Brutal Attack. And this is War Radio, P.O. Box 65, Fallbrook, California, 92088. Our big website is at resist.com, and our email address is warmetzger@sbcglobal.net. So far, we may change our server one of these days, so keep your ears open. And you can subscribe to our newspaper, or you should, you must do it. Subscribe to our newspaper, that's $30 per year, 12 issues. That's in the USA, and in Canada, Soviet Kanukistan, it's $40, and that's first class in a plain brown envelope. And also to all other countries around the world, it is $50, and we send that out first class in a plain brown envelope, and we think you'll like it because it's the most racist, irreverent, radical, revolutionary paper in the world as far as race is concerned. So anyhow, it's a we've had a lot of rain here in Southern California here the last few days, and we were getting ready. I had Jerry the Jew out here building us an ark, and he's making some headway there. But you know how slow a Jew's going to work, so it's going to take a while. Hell, the flood may come before he gets it built. Hey, we got a guest today. Yeah, not Dr. Caldenberg right at this time, but right now we're going to have a guest from out of town, from the big city, from up there in Minnesota. Does that give you a clue? Yeah, we're going to have Byron in here from Panzerfaust, and we're going to talk a little bit about their CD operation and their contribution to the struggle. So stand by. Well. Well, here he is in the bunker for the first time. It's Byron from Panzerfaust. How you doing, Byron?
Pretty good, Tom. Thanks for letting me sit in with you.
Well, you came out here, you thought you were going to get sunshined on, and you're getting rained on.
Yeah, I didn't even bring a coat.
Wow. And how's Panzerfaust doing?
We're doing really good. Doing a lot of new things and reaching out to a lot of new kids, and have a lot of cool projects coming up, and we're clipping along there.
I think I interviewed Anthony here about a year ago on the telephone, and we've got that show someplace. Well, how many bands have you got, or how many CD labels and all that? I don't know a lot about that.
Oh, we've got a couple of dozen bands on the label, and we've got probably 3 or 4 dozen CDs that are out. And we're picking up the pace and putting out more and more and attracting new bands all the time.
What attracted you to Minnesota for the center of skinhead music in the world?
Well, actually, when I was a teenager, I just happened to go up there because I had a cousin in Minneapolis, and I happened to run into some skinheads. And the boys from St. Paul would come over and help us go baldy hunting when we needed help. And one of them happened to be Ed, who later on started Bound for Glory, and things kind of went from there.
Big Ed, man. I remember him at one of our first Aryan Fests back in Oklahoma, and he got the chiggers so bad that he couldn't hardly he couldn't hardly stand it. I felt so sorry because he really had them all over him. I got them too, but not as bad.
Yeah, he's kind of a city boy. I know he came down to me and Emily's wedding in Oklahoma, and he's usually really busy and on the go, and he was down there with the bugs and the heat and didn't know what we did all day because we were sitting around, and I told him, we're doing it.
Yeah, yeah.
We might go shoot something later on today, but we're doing it.
So you're married, and you have how many children?
We got 3 now. We just had one about 2.5 months ago, an 11-pound boy named Eric, and so we got 3 kids now.
What about the other two? Are they girls or boys?
All of them boys.
All of them boys.
Forrest and Ethan and Eric.
How about that? It seems to run like that. I had 5 daughters and 1 boy, so I got one. It seems like the guys and gals have either girls or boys most of the time in a row.
Yeah, well, like I tell Emily, I'm kind of old to have a daughter, because if I have a daughter now, I'd have to stay in shape so I could still beat boys up in 16 years. So
oh, wow.
I'd rather have boys.
Wait a minute, you're just a young guy. What are you talking about?
Hey, I'm 32. I'm getting up there.
Oh, 32. Man, that is funny, man, when I'm 65 going heavily on 66 here, but my youngest is 19. Now, look, you have these support these fests all over the place, don't you?
Yeah, we actually we support some shows in Europe, but mostly the ones that are worth supporting here in America, we put our weight behind.
Now, you were just at the fest down in Phoenix, right?
Yeah, Aryan Fest.
Yeah, I was there. You guys had a bunch of CDs there, and some of the bands that played there, have they recorded for you?
Yeah, actually, Max Resist is on our label. Youngland is on our label. Rebel Hell is on our label. And one of the new bands there, American Standard from Las Vegas, they're actually working on a CD for us right now. And there was a couple of smaller bands there that we may put out.
What about that German band?
We may be putting them out, but I'm not sure. I think actually they just recorded a CD, and I don't know if it's been finalized who they're going to put that out with yet.
What was their name?
Patriots, Valhalla's Patriots.
Yeah, and there was a young man from Germany spoke, and he spoke well.
Yeah.
He's probably pretty happy to be in this country so he could say what he thinks.
Well, to a certain extent, although that's why we didn't let pictures of these guys get taken, because even if they say what they want to here in America, they could get arrested as soon as they got off the plane in Germany, so we kind of kept it a little quiet about
it. I hope they didn't get somebody to get pictures, because we know the cops are up there over the hill and probably had telescopic cameras and the whole bit.
They did, but, you know, the Germans know the risk that they run by doing stuff like
this.
Right.
So. I went to a little party for them up in Orange County on next night or when we got back or whenever. Anyhow, we took a bunch of pictures there, but they contacted me and wanted me to send them the pictures. So I'll be sending them the pictures and hope that the gendarmes don't open up the package.
Yeah, right.
So wait a minute. Now let's have a little of your history. Now, how did you stumble into this struggle? And of course, we don't use the word movement because that's a bowel movement. As far as I'm concerned, we're in the struggle. That separates us from a lot of the crap. As far as I'm concerned.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's actually funny you asked. I don't know if I ever mentioned this to you or not, but actually, when I was 16 years old. And I thought I was a bit of a punk rocker, although I lived in the country, so we didn't really know what the hell we were, you know. But my girlfriend called me up after school one day and told me to turn on the Oprah Winfrey Show. and I believe it was you and John, and all I know, you was calling Oprah, somebody called Oprah a monkey, and you guys were talking about niggers and that. It just, I went and shaved my head the next day. So I've been calling myself a skinhead since I was 16. A couple of us there at school did it, and we didn't know what the hell we were about, but...
Yeah.
eventually, like everybody else, we would get a fifth-generation copy of a Midtown Boot Boys tape and start to read more and listen to more. That was before websites for the most part. And so basically it kind of morphed from there. And then when I went to Minneapolis and hung out with skinheads, I think at the time Ed had a band called Mass Corruption. And that was kind of the... And then I went to prison for a few years, and by the time I got out of prison, everything had blowed up and there was white power music all over the place. So I've been catching up to it ever since I got out.
You know, that was Marty Cox that called Oprah a monkey.
Was it?
And she got all incensed, and then she's going to throw him out or have him thrown out.
Mm-hmm.
And so I said, well, if he goes, we all go. Now, all the guys on the stage, and then there was some of us in the audience, we all walked off. And I think we're the only guests that ever walked off Oprah Winfrey.
Is that right?
She'll never forgive us for that. But she was a bitch anyhow. I mean, she wasn't even a so-called nice Negro. She mm-hmm. was a bitch.
And I heard she was racist. I heard she didn't like black people.
Oh, no. She's a black racist.
Okay.
Yeah. She loves this power over white people and all mm-hmm. this money she's got.
Well, I tell you, I've heard of a thing called the Oprah effect, where if a publisher can get his author on her show, they will sell an extra 100,000 copies of the book immediately. And I've heard if she comes out with a certain brand of bathrobe on, they're sold out all across the country the next day. So she has gotten herself in an enviable position.
Well, that shows you how stupid much of our race is, because mm-hmm. we made her that. The white race put her there. Mm-hmm. It wasn't the black race, and not even the Jews. It's the white people just gravitated to that crap. They all want to feel like they're not racist. So mm-hmm. by watching her, they're expiating their guilt.
Sure.
That's the way I look at it.
Yeah, it's a cathartic experience for these millions of American white housewives that can watch Oprah and think they can feel her pain or, you know, whatever.
Yeah, right. So and then what happened as you moved along in your career?
Well,
how'd you get? You were with National Alliance for a while.
You know, I went to my wife's. My wife lived in Oklahoma, and before we were married, and I kind of felt inactive because it was out in the woods. I liked the privacy, but I kind of needed something to fill that void there of not being able to do stuff every day like I usually did. And we both joined the National Alliance. And we were actually on our way out to vacation in Cape Hatteras, and we stopped in West Virginia. And that happened to be the weekend that Hendrik Mobus, the black metal fellow from Germany, was arrested and sent back to Germany. And we kind of filled in at the warehouse. And then I told Dr. Pierce we'd pack up and move 1,000 miles and come kind of volunteer there, basically. Because I'd known, you know, resistance kind of had a bad reputation among skinheads for years, and I attributed most of that to the fact that Dr. Pierce was older and maybe out of touch, but me and Emily kind of believed in the stuff Dr. Pierce talked about, and we wanted to kind of pitch in and help out.
Sure.
And so I was there for about a year, and we left periodically over the years. I would go back to Minnesota and live for a few months or so at a time, and then I'd travel a bunch. And so we just kind of came back to Minnesota and started to help Anthony out with his label.
So you and your wife were out there at Elam City, huh?
Yeah, she's...
Well, I would feel cut off from society. I went out there one time, and man, I don't think I could handle that.
Well, I mean, it had its ups and downs, but we prefer actually to live... The suburbs we don't like, because any dirt ball can be 10 feet from your front door, whereas we like to live where if we can see you from our house, we can pull a gun on you and ask who you are, you know?
Yeah.
Not that I have guns or anything, but...
yeah, right.
Because I got felons and all that, but theoretically it could if you wanted to. But,
sure.
So we like the country actually more than the suburbs or the city, but...
Well, you know, not to go back a little bit, not to really dredge up old stuff, but I don't quite understand how Dr. Pierce, who really couldn't stand skinhead music, and he said so a couple of times, how he became such a godfather of the music scene there for a long time.
Well,
I mean, you know, you would think that would be a real problem.
Sure, yeah, it's like I don't support drugs, and so therefore I'm not going to sell them, even if there's money involved.
Yeah.
It might have been a couple of things. One, he may have personally been offended at the fact that Birdie was raided by the IRS and the white power music industry was pretty much knocked out of North America because of that, and he wanted to show that that couldn't be done. The other half is, though, anybody could see that white power music is a multi-million dollar business worldwide, and by buying Resistance, they skipped out on a whole lot of production costs and all that, and they basically just got a stock of CDs they could throw into production and start to sell, and if it had been run right, it could have been a multi-million dollar business
going. I see.
So he could probably put his personal distaste for the music. And also, too, the Alliance, what has kind of the engine that's kind of driven them over the years is a lot of young kids that will roll up thousands of pamphlets and flyers and scatter them all over the place. And whether that recruits people or not, it gets media attention, which helps drive the
sure.
the machine. And by using the music to hook the younger kids, because the older guy might be a 60-year-old dentist, and he might write him a check, but he's not going to be out there putting up billboards and throwing pamphlets. So by hooking the young kids in and getting them active and interested, he could kind of use their youth and vitality to spread his message farther and get
attention. Well, that's logical.
Sure, yeah.
That's very logical. Now, when did Anthony come into the picture?
You know, from
I think I asked him last time he was on the show, but I forget what he said.
Ironically enough, I think it was when he was in prison and he was reading National Alliance material, and he really got hooked on Dr. Pierce's message. And he, when he got out of prison, he actually started to distribute and sell Alliance books to his friends and whatnot. But somehow he got hooked in with Ed, and I remember meeting Anthony before he moved out to Minnesota at a concert in Kansas, and I believe it was Midtown Boot Boys and Blue Eyed Devils and BFG and all those guys. And Ed liked to raise money for SS, old retired SS guys, and Anthony, I think, took a few thousand bucks worth of CDs from him and went back to California and sold them all and gave the money to Ed, who donated it to this SS group. And from there, it just kind of, I think him and Ed kind of got into things and discussed the possibility of starting a label that would do things the right way, you know. And so he moved out to Minnesota a few years ago and kind of went from there.
What is your address for people who want to reach you, Panzerfaust? You know, give us your website and your address.
The website is panzerfaust.com. We've actually got a couple of dozen different domain names that we use in our web marketing to reach out to different genres of kids. But the main address is panzerfaust.com. And I believe the mailing address is P.O. Box 188, and that's in Newport, Minnesota. And I believe the zip code is 55055.
Well, you keep talking, and I'll look it up. You're but, like me. I forget half the things going on around here.
Well, you know, I don't send myself too many letters.
Yeah.
But I think that's the right address.
Right,
but, And my email address is byron@panzerfaust.com.
Okay.
And, people can get a hold of us.
What you're looking for is always in the back of the files. Well, here it is. Box 188, Newport, Minnesota. 55055.
Sure.
Now, is this your office phone number here? Do you remember?
Actually, no. That's Anthony's personal.
I better not put that on the radio.
We've got somewhere. I know we've got a phone number that.
I've got it in here someplace. Yeah.
Some people call it from time to time, but most kids are on the internet, so they. Email us. You know,
probably prefer to keep working and not be answering the phone all the time.
Well, we're. That's one of the things that our customers really dig about us is we see them as more than customers, because we're not just selling merchandise to kids. We're all in the same thing here, and we're all going to go to jail together or get shot together. We're all going to be in the trenches together. Well, so when if a new kid sends me an email or calls me and wants me to spend 20 minutes looking up a certain CD to find a certain song, I do it, and I email them back the same day if I can, and that kind of. It shows them that we, you know, we actually take an interest in
it. Well,
that.
One thing that definitely separates you from most of the people selling things is that you actually raise money and support prisoners, and you raise quite a bit of money to help out, what was his name down south that just got hit with a 10-year sentence?
Chester Doles.
Chester Doles, yeah. And so you did your best anyhow.
Well, we did, and the way we see it, we don't toot our horns about that too much, but... in some regards, it's not like a stockholders meeting, but we do feel responsible for how we spend these kids' money. And when they buy stuff off of us, it's with the expectation that we're going to do the right thing with the money. But we've sent a few thousand dollars out to the alleged members of the band Lanzer in Germany, who were the lead singer was recently convicted and sentenced to 4 years in prison for singing, and he's currently appealing that. But we do little stuff. Like, me and Anthony were both in prison, and we did this POW tape project where we put 105 minutes of white power rock and roll. And because I know what it's like to be locked up and have to listen to rap 24 hours a day against your will, you know. And we, if nothing else, it raises people's spirit a little bit, and we've produced a few thousand of these, and we send them free to anybody that's in prison.
Well, do you have any trouble getting them in?
We actually haven't had much trouble. We had one prison system that just wanted to verify that we were an actual business, and so we just sent them our, you know, business tax number and whatnot, and I think that cleared the problem up.
Yeah, I'm surprised that you haven't had more problems. I mean, the written word has problems. I mean, if I send any of our cartoons in, or we can't get our newspaper in anymore to most prisons.
Sure.
But we do this little Big House News that's just type material. And since I don't think most of the Cooney Roonies can read it, mm-hmm. they pass it on through to most people.
You know, it could be that. And also, of course, we don't have, you know, swastikas dripping off the cover of the TV.
Well,
and whatnot,
yeah.
But
yeah.
I think the whole reason they let these guys have a lot of the TVs and the radios is if you'll put your headphones on and sit around and listen to music or watch TV in your house, you're not causing trouble. So I think they, you know, go ahead and let them have it.
Yeah, but they are pretty sadistic in those prisons. It's almost like if you like something, they're going to make sure you don't get it, seems like to me.
Yeah, for the most part. I know when I was locked up, the guards actually had conflict with the administration because the guards just want to do their 8 hours and go home. And I actually had a guard tell me if it was up to him, they'd pass out big old marijuana joints every day and give us big screen TVs,
sure.
You know, because they don't give it. So they would rather, like, when you take away cigarettes and weights from the prison, the guards have to come into daily personal contact with guys that are nicking out and pissed off.
Yeah.
Right. So the guards would rather push to just give them what they want. And unless they, of course, if you break the rules, then they punish you. But if you're listening to music, and it's not going to really induce you to do anything you didn't want to do anyway.
It's not going to endanger a guard. Well, I noticed up in Canada when John and I were in jail for a few days up there that they have a civil service type situation with their prison and jail people. That's all they do. They're professionals. They don't move them from the academy, sheriff's academy, into the jail, and then back out on the street and all that kind of stuff. This is actually a class of people. That's all they do, and they were nice. They were very very nice up there. I don't know how it'd be if you're in there for a long time.
Sure.
But we got our tea and crumpets and everything every afternoon, and they always had a big smile on their face and had no problem.
I've noticed in prisons where that's their only profession, they're a lot more professional. Whereas you get a lot of county jails where the guys have gone through police academy and they want to be on the streets, but they make them work in the county jail. So these guys are mad to begin with because they think that they're babysitting. And actually, in Minnesota, there's a few cases where there's part-time police who also work as prison guards. And there was a few guys that actually had to put up with looking at this sucker every day that had arrested them to begin with, you know. So the people that their main job is just to administer the prison like a business, they tend to be more businesslike and professional and even-handed, you know.
Now, you've traveled around the world, I understand, a few times.
Well, yeah, mostly before, of course, I've been married 5 years and I haven't done nothing, you know.
Right.
But yeah, when I was a bachelor, sure, I'd save up money. And really, Ed had so many contacts. If I wanted to go to Slovenia, I'd say, hey, Ed, dig through your letters and find somebody cool in Slovenia. I'd go hang out and bum around and hitchhike around for a few months until I got broke, and then I'd come back to America and do it again, you know. And I'm glad I did, because now that I'm married and having kids, it probably won't happen again.
It's a little difficult. That's true.
Well, and these days, too, I'd almost be afraid to go to Europe. I'd probably end up in jail for...
That's something to consider, because when John tried to go over there, and that was quite a number of years ago, they arrested him coming off the plane, and they strip searched him and everything, and he gave him a hard time. They didn't like him.
Mm-hmm.
And then they put two armed guards, one on each side, flew him all the way back to Chicago. What a waste of
right?
Yeah. And dumped him in Chicago, and then I had to get him back out here to California. But anything can happen over there.
Well, he's lucky he only got sent back. I imagine out there they can go ahead and put you in prison like that Gerhard Laut fella did 4 years for printing his newspaper in Nebraska, you know.
Well, I think that was, it was Denmark that got him out of it.
Okay.
Yeah, they kidnapped him
and
let the Germans take him. Well, that should never have been. But I think it had a lot to do with the international aspects of what he was promoting and
sure.
The Nazi thing. I mean, this was really old, I shouldn't say old-fashioned, but it was sort of old-fashioned Nazi propaganda and the whole bit, and that just drove him crazy over.
It did, and I know the Clinton government and Janet Reno and all them kind of just looked the other way and let that happen. What I thought was really ironic, because I was just talking to him a few weeks ago, is that the government in America let this other government kidnap him from a different government, put him in prison for what is legally and constitutionally protected here in America, and then when he finally got out of prison there and came back to America, I think he was under indictment for 2 years because he refused to register as a felon. They tried telling him he couldn't vote and have a gun because he had felonies. And we know you could be a mass rapist in some of these third world countries and come to America and be a cop and do what you want to.
Sure.
But he did this in Europe, and they let it happen, and then they tried telling him he has to register as a felon, and he said, shove it up their ass, you know.
I remember that, yeah.
But very ironic, because, the third world people don't get checked out that much.
Well, with the Internet, we don't have to worry about traveling too much anymore. We can have instantaneous contact with about anybody we want to.
Sure, yeah. I know that jams them up in Europe a little bit. In fact, a guy was just arrested 3 days ago, because there's a Blood and Honor concert in England, and a guy in England sent the guy in Germany an email with a forbidden Blood and Honor symbol on it, and I think his email was getting monitored, and they raided his house and stole his computer to check for this forbidden image. So, yeah, it's a lot less risky to download an MP3 for these kids if they want to hear an interview or some music, but say if a bitter ex-girlfriend turns you into the police, they'll raid your house and take your computer to find this forbidden MP3, So there's risks involved in that for them, but of course it's less risky for us to have to go there.
Well, a little trip down memory lane. I have a friend here in town who owns a fairly large restaurant here, and his father was in the German army in World War II, but his uncle was SS. And when he went over to Germany, he said his uncle gave him this SS dagger. But he said it had Blood and Honor on it,
mm-hmm.
but the government had made him file that off.
Really?
Can you see how petty that is?
Yeah.
It had to be filed off for him to keep the dagger. He could keep the dagger, but he couldn't have Blood and Honor. Now, how sick can you be?
I was at a friend's house in Heidelberg, actually, a guy that played guitar for the German band Treep Tater, and he actually had the police come and knock on his door and said that the neighbors across the way had complained that through the curtains in his bedroom they could see a flag hanging up that he was allowed to have, because it was just, I think you're allowed to have one of everything. But and so the police actually knocked on his door and told him he was going to have to close his curtains tighter because neighbors could see the flag.
Unbelievable. They talk about the regimentation of Hitler. Hell, it's a lot more regimented now than it was then.
Gypsies and Jews even had a lot more rights under Hitler than the Germans do themselves.
Yes.
Under the current government.
Well, what's, Byron, what's the latest CDs that you've put into production?
Well, the last CD that we put out was actually another fundraising CD for the band Lanzer and their legal efforts to stay out of prison. And we've had some people from Intimidation One and some other bands do an entire CD of Lanzer songs in English with the English translation.
Oh, I listened to that.
It's a lot of good stuff.
That's good.
I enjoyed it because I wondered what they were singing about on some of those songs.
Sure.
And they actually, the alleged singer of the band actually said when he heard it, he got goosebumps. And,
wow.
And the fact that we were going to open his music up to all the English-speaking people really, really got him happy. And so we've got that going on. I believe Youngland is in the studio doing a CD of covers of country songs that they're going to call Smothered and Covered, and that's going to be pretty wild. But we've got basically, I think, Final War, Aggressive Force, got a lot of the top bands that are Hate Machine. They're going to be recording stuff here in the near coming future, so we're going to be coming out with a lot of new stuff.
Now, this we usually don't want to date the show because it probably will be played for years and years, but what kind of, you got any more fests coming up?
We were just kind of talking about maybe going ahead and starting, start putting together the next Aryan Fest and
mm-hmm.
see about where that's going to be. I know there's going to be, the guys from Condemned Records are going to be putting on a little show in California. We're also going to have, I believe, Hammerfest. The Hammerskins are putting on Hammerfest up in Detroit, that we're going to be there. I think they're doing a little commemorative Hitler birthday party like they've been doing for a few years up in Detroit. And I think I might zip up to that one. But, we're going to have probably going to be a half a dozen good-sized shows coming up here.
But they can go to your website and find out exactly what's cooking, huh?
Yeah, we've just added a message board recently. Also in the news section of the website, that's where we give updates on not only shows here in America, but also shows in Europe. And a lot of the Europeans like our website because stuff that they're not maybe allowed to openly communicate about on their websites, we put information up so people from other countries actually come to Panzerfaust to see what's going on in their own backyard, because they're not allowed to talk about
it. It's a lot safer.
It is, yeah. Although I imagine a lot of these laws we're talking about in Europe are probably already written up, kind of like a lot of the anti-terror legislation was written just waiting to get signed when something crazy happened. So a lot of these laws, I imagine we've got another few years where what we're doing is going to be legal, and then pretty soon we're going to have the same laws as they do.
But, you'll really be popular then. When you make it illegal, things really get going.
Well, you know, I kind of kid around and I talk about how the government had that every time they have a war against something, it just increases what they were trying to put out. They had a war against poverty and a war against drugs and a war against terrorism.
And they lost all of them.
And we got more people that are poor, stoned, and blown up shit than ever before. So I figure if they declare war on racism, we'll really be clipping along.
That's what I've always said. I've warned them, don't drive us underground. You wouldn't like us when we're underground.
Well, you know, in Germany, everything's about half illegal over there, and they have a march for Rudolf Hess. They get 5,000 people, and there's no beer, and there's no music. It's just I think actually the more they crack down on us, the better it's going to be for us. Some of us will end up in prison, but that's what you get.
I've always said that nothing builds resistance like oppression.
Well, yeah,
and it's not only us. A lot of times we think it's only us, but see, it's all about control. The system always has to maintain control. That's our whole thing in life, to keep everything under their fist, okay? It don't make any difference whether you're a lefty out here or a righty or you're a racist or what. If you're going against the government, they're going to come after you.
Sure.
And they did it back in the 60s and, you know, in the 70s. And so we're not alone. And also the government is developing and breeding a really interesting mosaic of anti-government people.
Sure.
You got the blacks, the black separatists, the black nationalists. You've got the Aslan people. They're coming on pretty strong too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're coming out big time against the Jews.
I've been seeing that.
The poor Jews. You almost feel sorry for those poor Jews. they try to help all these people out supposedly, but there's always a hook in what they're doing. And then all of a sudden they find out of what they're really like and they oppose them.
Well, it's kind of like Martin Luther. You know, he actually pushed them, but in pushing and promoting the Jews, he got so close to them, he saw what they were about, and so he ended up turning on them too, and they probably were all confused and had hurt feelings while
right.
They were their former friend. Well, you know, I always thought that prison was kind of a microcosm of the world at large, and a lot of the things I saw in prison about how the administration and the institution reacted to perceived threats of the security of the institution, they didn't give a damn if you were a vice lord or a disciple. Or Aryan Brotherhood, they regarded it as the same. And so, to a large part, it put a lot of the prisoners against the institution. And, they're doing actually a better job of creating people on our side than we are doing ourselves, you know. But it's kind of like racism, you know. People say, oh, your parents must have raised you racist. No, actually, niggers made me racist. You know
yeah.
What I mean? Niggers have recruited more skinheads than we have.
Well, they did me, too. I wasn't raised overtly as a racist because our area was 99% white.
Sure.
I mean, there was no reason to be racist. There was none of them around.
Sure.
You didn't even think about them. Didn't have any dealings with them. Didn't see them. And that was it. But when I went in the Army and came in contact, bam, with these blacks from South Chicago, whoa, that was an eye-opener, I'll tell you.
Well, you know, it's like people say, if it wasn't for Jews, there wouldn't be anti-Semitism. So when you hear these people talking about wanting to smash anti-Semitism, well, I'd love to get rid of it too, but there's only one way to do that.
Yeah, well, also, the Jews like a little anti-Semitism, at least the Orthodox leaders, they think it sort of keeps them cohesive. And in a way, they're right. It's sort of like anti-Aryanism, you know. The more they hit us from the outside, the more we become a united front, see?
Mm-hmm, sure.
And so that is true to agree. So some of that anti-so-called Semitism has to be a little suspect. I try to take that type of thing out of it and just say Semitic people are just non-white people, race-mixed people, and we're dealing strictly with race here. And if you're mm-hmm. and if you're white and you're European and you're not Jewish and you're not a Christian fanatic, well, you sound like a good potential for the struggle.
Yeah, sure. You know, sometimes when you hear about the Jews always moaning about how they've been kicked out of every country and they're the victim, the whole victim status thing, it's the example I like to think about is if you go into a bar and 10 people beat your ass and throw you out, well, you know, it might have been their fault, it might have been your fault, but if you go into 10 bars on the same night and you get beat up and thrown out of every one, it's not them, it's you, you know?
Right.
And it's kind of like these women that you know, choose to be in destructive relationships where they subconsciously push a guy's buttons, And when you hear a woman say stuff like, you know, it sucks, my last five husbands have gotten drunk and beat me up, you know.
Well, yeah.
You're either making them do it or you're picking them the ones that do it.
Yeah.
And so when the Jews moan about how they've been treated so badly, I think they maybe subconsciously are bringing on their own victimization so they have something to feel sorry for.
Well, they're schizophrenic as a group of people. The whole thing is schizophrenic. You know, they had a love-hate relationship with Nazism. I swear they did.
Mm-hmm.
They're only mad because they didn't dream it up.
Sure.
You know, and even once it got started, they wanted to be in it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they had to force them out of it. So the Jews are funny that way. And then the nicer you are to them, it seems like, well, why are you being nice to me?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
And have you ever met a Jew on the street and you never met him before and the first thing out of his mouth is, I'm a Jew? I have. Almost every Jew I run into, do you go around saying, I'm an Aryan,
yeah,
to everybody on the street? You know, you think they'd recognize that. But Jews, I met one here, a businessman in Fallbrook not too long ago, and it's happened over and over again. And I'll say, yeah, I'm Tom Metzger. Well, I'm da-da-da. I'm a Jew.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. You know, they're almost asking for it.
Well, you know, it's funny because the first Jew that I ever met that I knew was a Jew, and it was just really funny, but he ripped me off. And it was really funny because I was in prison, and here was this guy and worked in a print shop with me, and he was from New Jersey. And he says, well, I hope there's not going to be any trouble because I hear you're a skinhead and I'm a Jew. And my family has gotten a really hard time from the skinheads out in Atlantic City, and I assume it must be the AZ boys that harassed his family or something, I don't know. But in any case, well, I was like, well, I don't give a damn. Just do your thing and leave me alone. I don't care if you're a Jew or not. Well, he said that he had a good connection, and he could get this Weider protein powder, and it wasn't usually sold in the prison, but he could get this stuff.
Our governor liked that stuff.
Sure, yeah. Well, anyway.
Arnold!
I gave him $40 in coin, you know, and I bought this stuff, and it tasted like crap, and I actually bought a couple of these things off of him, and it wasn't until later, and I went to a different prison. The scam that he had was he was just buying the cheap no-name brand protein powder from the other prison. Because when I got to Oak Park Heights, that crap tasted the exact same as the shit he was selling me. And I found out that he was just getting these Weider containers and putting the powder. And I thought, well, look how funny that is. The first Jew I ever met that I knew was a Jew, and he ripped me off. And I kind of thought it was funny. You know?
Yeah, Weider was a Jew, too.
Yeah, you know, I've heard that.
Yeah, he was a Jew. And when I first came to California, the first thing I did was join Muscle Beach Gym down in Santa Monica.
Mm-hmm.
And by that time, the homos had gotten so plentiful, they had to move the thing up into a basement of a building up on 1st or 2nd Avenue. But then after working out there for a while, all of a sudden the homos are standing around looking at you there, so I quit that. But I was taking that Weider stuff. But that's when Arnold Schwarzenegger came here early on, and I told this story, but some people don't realize it. When in 76, David Duke came out here, and we were doing something. I forget what it was, but he stayed at my house 2 or 3 days, and David was on a weightlifting kick at the time, and so he said, can I use your phone? I said, sure, and he called Arnold Schwarzenegger, and he was going to go up there and stay, and he stayed at Arnold Schwarzenegger's apartment out in West L.A.
Yeah.
I don't know how long, a few days like that, because Arnold was a sympathizer and even a contributor, probably, and he wanted to get some of Arnold's secrets of weightlifting.
Hmm.
And it's funny because I've told reporters that several times, and, you know, I said, look, I was standing right there. I heard him talking to him on the telephone, and still nobody said anything about it during the election. I think it's funny. So, but, see, Arnold was a hypocrite because he used to have his driver stop the car after he made up some money. And he'd run over to a Nazi demonstration and get a bunch of their literature and take it home.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the time he'd get the anti-black stuff, not the anti-Jew stuff.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people don't realize he wasn't close with his father. Says his father was Waffen-SS, da-da-da-da-da. But Arnold really didn't like his father very much. So Arnold used to go down by this river and work out with these guys, sort of an amateur weightlifting club that used to lift down by the river. And there he come in contact with this man, I forget his name, who was Jewish.
Hmm.
And this Jew sort of took Arnold under his arm.
Hmm.
And so Arnold was very pro-Jew. In fact, Arnold went out on the street a couple of times and beat up on Nazis. So
really?
I know all about it. But he gave what? I forget how many million bucks to the Simon Wiesenthal Center to try to clean up his name, you know.
True.
But nobody would ever print that about what I know about Arnold.
Is that right? I had heard that. It seemed like years ago somebody told me Arnold Schwarzenegger used to run across the street and buy when you used to have guys selling war papers on the street or something.
Well, he might have done that, but I don't remember that per se. But I know when the Nazi Party people were marching in L.A. once in a while, he would do that.
Mm-hmm.
When he was a nobody, he used to get out of his own car and run across the street and get the stuff. And then after he started making it, he'd have his driver stop, and he'd have the driver run across and get the stuff.
He didn't have a black chauffeur,
yeah,
did he?
So anyhow, anytime they want to, if he doesn't play their game, they'll pull the rug out from under him.
Sure.
Arnold will probably be a one-term governor. But you see, that's the way they get these guys. They build them up, and they got this background, and they can always pull the plug on them.
Mm-hmm.
So he better serve the Jews well in California, and the big money boys, which he's doing now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's raped the highway and bridge reconstruction fund, and now he's trying to float bonds. It's going to cost people three times what the bond is, so what's the difference?
Mm-hmm.
If you're in debt, you're going to borrow money to get out of debt? I mean, come on.
Yeah, well, he's caught on to the whole political scam of basically creating a law or creating a problem that's not going to get felt by people until you're out of office anyway, so it doesn't matter.
That's right. Well, that's
as bad as he is, I think he's going to be the last white governor of California, so you better
pray. Well, we might as well be honest and have a non-white. You know, that's why I supported the Mexican for governor, because I said he's a racist.
Mm-hmm.
And let's get it right out in the open, like our candidate for president, the Right Reverend Al Sharpton.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we support Al Sharpton because he's the only one of the candidates who said, hey, I understand the white race, and I don't think he likes the white race. And at least he says white once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
And also, they asked him, well, what would he change in government? And the first thing he said was, I'd get rid of Alan Greenspan, the Jew, the most powerful political person in the country, much more powerful than the president.
Sure.
Anybody that's got the balls to say, I'm going to get rid of this Jew, has got to be sort of okay. So we said, we're getting behind Al.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But he ain't doing too good.
Because
his black brothers are out there supporting white millionaires.
Well,
what's that all about? What's the matter with these black people? They rail against the white rich, but yet this Edwards, who is extremely wealthy,
mm-hmm.
claims he worked it all out for poverty, which is crap. His dad was rich as hell.
Sure.
And Kerry, all these people, who's connected with the Jews and everything, here's all these blacks are going to, they're not going to take it no more. They turn right around and vote for the massa.
Well, I think probably the main reason for that, it might have been a joke, but I heard the main reason that Al Sharpton is losing support among blacks is because he's promising them jobs, you know, so it scares them, you know. you heard about the nigger that had a heart attack on Halloween?
No.
Somebody came dressed up as a job, you know.
Might be it. You know, I was on a show once with Al Sharpton, said as close as you and I, closer actually. And I did spot him as a charlatan right off. And I think the black people realize he's sort of using them. Of course, you know that the deal where he accused the white people of raping that girl.
Tawana Brawley.
Tawana Brawley. Mm-hmm. And he never really paid off for that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So anyhow, we thought it was sort of sticking in their eye. You know, I sent that press release out to almost every press outfit in the United States, and not one that I know of printed it.
Is that right?
It scared the shit out of them.
Well, you know what I've noticed, and there's a really good book called, I'm brain farting on the name, the one about Jesse Jackson that the guy wrote. But what I've noticed about this is blacks, poor blacks, after they see what, because you know how they really are like a barrel of monkeys, and if you see one, they see one crawling out of the barrel, they want to reach up and pull them back down. And number one, I think it makes them inherently jealous and bitter when they see one of their own who actually makes it somewhere. But I think blacks have caught on to the point. It's kind of like a kid. If a kid puts his hand out, and you put candy in it, and every time if you keep putting candy in his hand, he's going to stick his hand out. Guilty white people will do 10 times as much for poor blacks as a black will, because they know as soon as the black gets into power, he's going to tell them, just, you got to be patient, you know, I'm going to work from within, and next thing you know, he's done dicked them over, and he is getting used to the cigars and the limousines and don't care about them. You put a guilty white guy in office in the ghetto, and he's going to bend over backwards to make the blacks happy. And I think the blacks are catching on to it and realize you can't play the race card with a black politician. So they would rather have a guilty white guy who will suck up to him for his whole term than one.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's the big thing. Of course, it's all built on guilt. But what about the O.J. Simpson deal, where he had isolated himself, married white women, lived in a white world, was running around with whites all the time,
mm-hmm.
But yet the blacks turned him loose. I mean, you know, that's sort of strange.
Well, you know, and of course, we're not really too upset with O.J. Simpson.
No,
he's got a better track record than.
Well, I don't care. I mean, you know, if the people are too stupid to do anything about it, well, what do I care?
Well, it's kind of like it's like with Tiger Woods. I think he's called himself called the Cajun or some damn thing, but he's got more white in him than black. But you know, they're just so desperate for anybody that's worth a shit that's close to being black that they want to claim him, even if it's embarrassing to him or whatnot.
Well, look, he married a white Swede, didn't he? Yeah,
mm-hmm. And supermodel.
Well, he's more Asian than black, but that's where I guess the brains come from.
Sure.
The ability. Wow. Yeah. You guys see any movies? You like movies?
Yeah, we have seen a couple of, like, The Italian Job. Me and Emily are kind of a sucker for those old caper films, you know, where they rob banks or something like
that
and get away with it. But,
yeah.
The Italian Job was a good one we've seen recently.
Yeah, I'm a movie buff. I haven't been to too many lately, but I can't think of anything real. Oh, Big Fish. I like that. That was a really good movie, I thought, especially for us old guys.
Yeah. I haven't seen that one.
Oh yeah, and this one that Bill Murray did about Lost in Translation, where he's over in Japan and he meets this American white girl.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's a nice movie. Your wife would like that.
It's a
love story.
Chick-flick.
Yeah, but you know, I enjoy some of those chick flicks too. I mean, you know, Bill Murray was sort of a fading actor, and he started just doing TV ads, and now he's clear over in Japan advertising whiskey, and it was sort of a comedy, but sort of sad, too.
It seems like a lot of these chick flicks, they kind of irritate me because I've noticed this trend of the whole story is around some bumbling, inept Jew who walks away with the pretty white girl, like something about Mary. All these kind of David
Schwimmer.
Adam
Sandler stuff.
Yeah, it's like, and you see him, and it's like, nah, that ain't going to happen in real life.
Yeah, he's always a dumb acting, and people take him as like a white guy, and he's dumb acting, but he gets the beautiful woman. It's sort of like those movies where the nerds are winning against the jocks.
Sure.
Of course, I must say I wasn't too friendly with the jocks either when I was in high school. But anyhow, you know, the jocks are usually going to walk off with the women, that's for sure.
You know, a good one we just saw, it was actually a documentary about the Amish called Devil's Playground, and it's about the period between the ages of 16 and 25 where Amish kids basically go out into the world and experience everything and then decide whether they want to be Amish or not, and in which case they sow all their wild oats and they go back to the church if they want to, but it's called the Rumspring when they have this. And they had these wild, and of course there's no, I don't know if there's any black Amish. I don't think there are.
No.
But these kids dress like English, as they call it, and they're having keg parties and bonfires on private property, and there's sometimes 1,500 of these kids will get together from all over the place, and I'm thinking there's 1,500 white kids partying, and I think we ought to send them a bunch of CDs, because they were all about acting like wiggers, because their way of experiencing the world is what they see as popular culture, is all this stuff. Well, we ought to send them some Screwdriver and Bound for Glory CDs and let them rumspring on that, you know?
Well, I was raised in an area right where the Amish were back in Indiana, so I got quite a bit of experience with them, and there's a new reality show going to come on TV now about an Amish kid or a couple of kids that are in regular society, and that might be an interesting thing to watch. But I didn't realize that they had this intermediary thing where they let them loose and they sort of acted like everybody else. I thought it was more restrictive than that.
These kids, actually, some of them, they got caught selling drugs and stuff. They let them have cars, they had CD players, and they go and kind of live away from the community. But the funny thing is, the retention rate is, you would think that they would be losing a lot of kids to all the sexy stuff that we do outside of their normal lifestyle. Their retention rate is the highest it's ever been. It's higher now than it was in the 1700s or 1800s. It's 90% of these kids, and I wonder how many of them come out and experience the crap your main culture is. They come out and experience that, and it's fun for a little bit, but they go back to, you know, safety and security and family.
I think it has to do, like, when I came to California and obviously 21 looking for a good time, and bachelors partying, partying every night, partying at the house, partying at work, partying after work, and after about 2 years of that, I just burned out, and I got married, and it worked. The marriage worked good because I had it all burned out of me. I was tired of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, you find that a lot, and I think it's smart of them to let them go ahead and experience it so they don't have regrets for their whole life that they wish they could have done something. Let them go do it. And
right.
If you had access to their thought process for the first 16 years of their life, if it took hold the way you were successful at it, they will come back to it if they choose it. But I don't agree with their religion. I don't even know too much about it. But all I know is they're white and they have a lot of kids, so we can take a shot at educating future generations, you know.
Well, Mr. Klassen came from that type of background, not Amish, but I forget what that group was, that they were in Russia, and then they came to Mexico, and then they came to the United States.
Hmm.
I forget the name of the group, but there's a lot of similarities. My on my stepfather's side, they have what they call the Dunker Church, which is a lot like the Amish and Quaker and held to the old ways and stuff. And I used to be, my dad used to drag me down there once in a while when they had what they call a soup meeting.
Mm.
And it'd be all these, you know, a couple of hundred of these people come in buggies and some in cars, and they'd preach all day long. They'd break at noon, you'd go out and they'd have like broth soup.
Mm-hmm.
And the women sit on one side, men on the other. And then you go back in, they'd preach all the rest of the day. Boy, and those were hard seats, man. They were plank seats.
Mm-hmm.
My butt was sore by the time I got out of there. So I've had some acquaintance with these people. I forget exactly how that all developed, but I think it was one sect, and then they split up here, and they split up there. And it's, you know how Christians are.
Sure.
You know. And but I think they're a lot more honest than most Christian churches. You didn't see a lot of wealth in the church.
Mm-hmm.
There was nobody out there sticking a deal in your face to give money all the time.
Oh, yeah. Hell, they don't even want them stupid orange triangles on their buggy because I think it draws attention to themselves, you know.
Yeah.
But they, well, I know half of my family, I'm half Scotch-Irish, and the other half is old German Mennonites that came over. And I think they came. I think what it is in Europe, from what this documentary said, they believed that it was wrong to baptize babies. They thought people ought to have a free choice to be baptized. And so they were actually burnt at the stake because they didn't baptize their kids, and so they screwed off and all came to America. And that's what, after Rumspringa, if you decide to go be baptized, you've made your choice, you know.
Yeah.
So that's the, but it's split into 15 different things: Mennonite this, and Amish and Quaker, and you know whatever. But yeah, Christians do have a habit of bickering over
right
which way you cross yourself from left to right or right to left, or we're going to burn you to death if you grow a beard or not, or you know.
But being raised in that area, I can tell one thing, that they have to have something on the back of those buggies, because you're coming down the road doing 80 miles an hour and all of a sudden there's a buggy with no lights or just a little teeny light, and they're black, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of them have got killed that way. Well, hell, you're coming up on somebody with a horse and buggy at 80 miles an hour or 70 or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, you can't hardly get stopped. You got to swerve past.
Yeah, right.
So a lot of them have been run over.
Mm-hmm.
But anyhow, there's no black Amish because they have to all work together to build each other. If a barn burns down, they all get together and rebuild the guy's barn.
Mm-hmm.
They work their asses off. They're very hard-working people.
Sure.
Now, you know, black guy's going to want to get into that.
That's like kryptonite.
Yeah, right. No way, man.
Get up before dawn and start working, and you can't listen to rap music or nothing.
Yeah, well, so back to the CDs. Now, we're expanding, and so Skinhead Music is getting bigger and greater.
It is. We're doing a lot of new stuff. We actually have a couple of dozen different domains, and we're reaching out into a lot of different genres. White power music is a lot more diversified than it was 10, 15 years ago. We've got everything from folk ballads to funny country songs to really hardcore stuff, black metal. There's a lot of, you don't have to listen to the same oi beat, you know, over and over. We've got a lot of diversity and quite frankly, superior musical talent to what is allowed to be popular in the mainstream. And when kids get turned, it's basically how successful we can be in getting it to the attention of the 50 million white kids that we're trying to reach, and they go nuts when they hear it.
I've noticed the quality has come a long way. Now, I don't sit around listening to skinhead music all the time, but it seems like, you know, the skinhead music of 10 years ago, and now I listen to what's being done now, is a lot better music.
Yeah. It's funny. I know a lot of the people that wanted to keep it traditional and oi would actually be unhappy when Ed was the first guy, I think, to add an extra guitarist and actually have, some metal licks in his guitar work. But it's tapped into, the music is just a vehicle. We're not trying to keep it like a little private clubhouse in the woods where nobody else is allowed. The music is a vehicle to reach these kids, and we'll do about anything except white rap music, you know, but country, metal. It'd be nice to do some white power bluegrass, folk music. It's just a vehicle for the message.
Sure.
So
sure. Well, that's where I come in, because that's my main thing.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I like all kinds of music, it depends on the time of day, you know, sure. what music I like. And when I go to a fest, I really enjoy the Oi music.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm out dancing with my lady, I'm not too much into that. You know?
Yeah, our music isn't really designed for dancing with your girlfriend necessarily.
Yeah, and that article they wrote down in Phoenix about the guys out there dancing around,
mm-hmm.
they're trying to make implications there. Yeah,
yeah,
well, they better not tell them to their face, huh?
No, they don't. No, that's
yeah. Different. So you see a bright future.
Yeah. Eventually, you know, we're doing more and more to get this in front of the kids, and the internet is helping a lot. Our MP3 page gets buttloads of hits. I mean, you got people, and actually, the funny thing is, I used to look at the logs on one of my websites, and I could see who was using the website from a government or an educational computer, and I would just search the logs for .edu or .gov, and it was funny. I'd have, I think the funniest one was I had a guy in the jet propulsion lab at NASA that used to come and read our black jokes, you know.
Yeah.
We'd have people from Rice and Cornell and Harvard and Yale, you name it, coming, and I could see what MP3s they listened to and how many times they listened to them.
Sure.
And, you know, a lot of people are afraid to support us because we're the big taboo, but we're kind of using that against him because, you know, you tell a kid he's not allowed to do something and he'll do it, you know,
sure.
twice a day.
Sure.
And so the more, every line that you couldn't cross in the 60s, if you brought a black guy home to dinner, that was totally unheard of. And then now it doesn't even shock anybody to be gay or put gerbils in your ass or whatever
yeah.
they do. The last line that you can't cross is to be white and like it.
Yeah.
And we're sitting there right there waiting for him to want to cross that line. And now if you want to be rebellious these days, you got to be a white racist. And a lot of kids are in that rebellious phase when they're teenagers, and we've got the music that's giving them the answers. You know?
That's great. That's great, Byron. And you've got to say hello to Anthony when you get back home. And let's see, what was that website again?
Oh, panzerfaust.com.
And the address was Box 188.
Newport, Minnesota.
Was it 55?
55055.
Yeah. Okay. Byron, it's been good to have you here today, and we hope all you people out there, all you white racist bigots, irreverent types, revolutionaries, like the show.
Thanks for letting me sit in.
We'll see you later.
Okay.
They can't see you, but we're shaking hands, okay? I'm going to close out the show with some more skin music here.
So many reasons they condemn I had to live. The words are